when Senator Emil Jones accepted the presidency. He was reelected. He's now the president. And in his speech, and actually in his seconding, well, the people who seconded his nomination also mentioned this very extensively. Education funding reform is being a top priority. And Emil Jones made it perfectly clear that he intended to move something that would change how we fund education. I've been working with Senators Meeks and Duvalier all through last year and continuing this year. In fact, I met with them, with Senator Meeks, and in a forum up in Chicago yesterday where this was the topic. And we're looking to move a piece of legislation that addresses property tax relief and more funding to education K-12. My proposal differs in that it would be education funding kindergarten through university. And mine's different from what Senator Meeks has, and I'm going to offer mine as an amendment to his bill. And if need be, I'm considering filing a standalone bill. Also, of course, I'm looking for support in the House and hopeful that area colleagues can help with this changing the way we fund education, and also that we get a bipartisan coalition going. And so it's, I think it has traction. I think it's going to be one of the top issues. I think it will move. Certainly in the Senate, there's a commitment to move that legislation. And I'm going to work together with Senators Meeks and Duvalier. They're both from Chicago, and hopefully form a regional coalition, Chicago and downstate, and also Republican-Democrat coalition.
But your proposal for swapping the income tax increase with a property tax relief bill is not gotten unanimous approval, obviously, and Representative Jacobson, you said you've had some difficulty with that proposal.
I do have some difficulty with that proposal. For one thing, you know, we haven't seen anything yet that has serious potential for being signed by the governor. But, you know, talking about the proposal, the last one, the one that the senator is referring to having worked on, not his, but, you know, had a lot of flaws in it that didn't have guarantees that the generated revenue would ultimately really result in property tax relief or that the money would actually be used for education. Now, I've had some opportunity to look a little bit at the senator's bill proposal anyway, and you know, you talk about a tax swap, but it's not a tax swap. It's really a pretty big increase in the tax that individuals would pay. The average individual pays statewide, but $1,299 a year in income tax. And if the proposed increase went up to the suggestion that Senator Winkle has, the 4.75%, the average individual would pay $2,831. About just a little more than $2,000.
What do you think would have to change in order to get your support? And do you have an idea of what the governor would insist on?
I don't know what the governor would insist on. We really have to work at making sure our schools are funded. We agree on that. I don't know what the end product is going to be. But this is a huge increase in the tax for the amount of rebate that an individual would get back on the tax bill.
Another question was, you know, the insurance that any income tax increase would be met with a property tax decrease. How do you address that concern that Representative Jacobson had?
Well, Representative Jacobson and I had an opportunity. She came to my office. We reviewed this. She's seen my proposal. And she knows as well as I do what this bill does is it creates a $2.4 billion property tax relief fund. It reduces by 20% the education part of a person's property tax bill. Now, that will actually show up and be abated and show up as a rebate on everybody's property tax bill. So you will see it. You will see what your taxes would be. And you'll see the amount that the state will pay income taxes instead of your property taxes to the school district. So that's the swap. This is definitely a swap bill. This is a $2.4 billion property tax swap where income tax is used to pay for people's property taxes, which will result in a lessening or a reduction in the property tax bill the education part by 20%. So that's very significant, first of all. In addition to that, it increases funding to education kindergarten through high school in our public schools by $1,000 per student per year. So you end up with a property tax reduction of $2.4 billion, an increase in education funding, $1,000 per student per year, which will cost $1.8 billion. That money does go to education. That's helping to pay for our schools. It's swapping out the property tax with income tax. It's something we've talked about for years and years and years. And also what my bill does is it creates a $500 million, that's $500 million per year as a revenue stream to higher education. So that would go to 80% to the universities, public universities, 20% to our community colleges. You know, the governor's talking about keeping the level of funding for higher education level again this year, which means it'll be the same level that we had in fiscal year 1996, which is horrible. That's an unbelievable affront to the quality of higher education in this state. So this bill does address that, and that's $500 million. So this is truly an education funding reform bill that we've been talking about for 40 years. And, you know, we got three options here. You know, we can do the Meeks bill, which goes way beyond and creates a bunch of different taxes that we don't need. My alternative, which I think focuses like a laser beam on funding for education K through university and lowering people's property taxes, or we can continue to wring our hands and say, gosh, I don't know if people will like it if we ask them to step up and do this and make public education a number one priority and just do nothing and keep the status quo. We can't do that, in my opinion, because 82% of our school districts in this state are in deficit spending. There's a train wreck right down the tracks. We can see it. We need to do something. And that's why I'm proposing this.
Representative Jacobson, do you see a tax swap at the end of this in some way or another?
It's not a swap. That's the point that I'm trying to make. It's a pretty big increase because an individual's income tax would go up. If we were to use the statewide average, an individual's income tax would go up $758. If we looked at the Champaign County median average income, an individual, you know, on that basis, the median average increase would be just above $1,000. The average abate from the real estate tax for one Urbana house, and this is an average, would be $322, or in Champaign would be $369. So it's a pretty big increase in taxes.
But as far as the concept of a swap for one, you know, property tax or an income tax, in one way or another, might that be something that the Democratic majority in the legislature would be interested in moving through? In general, in concept.
In general, they might be on a real swap, not a huge increase.
Well, you know, Naomi, I'm not quite sure I understand. You're saying that it's not a complete dollar-for-dollar swap, and I'll grant you that. But look, this is a swap. This is swapping out $2.4 billion of income tax for people's property tax bills. That is a swap. There's no getting around that. This is a swap bill. We're swapping out $2.4 billion, which is nothing to sniff at. That is a major, significant property tax reduction, 20% of the education part on people's property tax bills. That costs the state $2.4 billion in income tax. That income tax will go to the schools instead of the people's property taxes, which means that the people's property tax bills will go down. It also increases the level of funding by $1,000 per student per year. And I got to tell you, we got school districts in this area that have spent up their reserves, no longer have the ability to raise their property taxes, and they can't borrow. So they're on the brink of insolvency. Georgetown Ridge Farm in Vermilion County is one of those. I mean, I can point to it. You can look at their finances. We have a lot of them that are coming down the pike that if they continue to deficit spend, in other words, spend their reserves to balance their budgets, they're going to be in dire straits.
Let's move on to the general issue of the budget. Education funding, notwithstanding, the governor has shown that he's very unwilling to support anything that would call for a tax increase. What can be done when revenue projections still see the, you know, the possibility of a deficit for the state of Illinois. Are there any things that may need to be cut? Where do you see the budget picture shaping up at this point, Representative Jacobson?
Well, I think what we do see is that we know we're starting off facing a $2 billion deficit to start with. And it's definitely going to be a very tough year. Again, when we start working on the budget, when we start off with a deficit, you know, we had one-time revenues last year to fall back on, and we don't have those again. We can't count on those, and we have some mandated spending pressures that we need to take care of. It is going to be a tough year, and I think we need to work really hard at making sure that we're spending the money in the right places. You know, we have to fund our education, pre-K right through higher education. But we can't let the governor, you know, we can't let the governor cut there, and we can't let him raid more funds.
Is this something that may call for a tax increase of some kind?
Well, look, And I understand your struggle to answer the question because, I mean, it is a difficult question facing us all. And I don't have all the answers either. But I got to tell you, what I'm proposing with education funding reform is to come up with a revenue stream to fund education. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that you want to raise – you want to have education funding and to fight the governor in case he wants to cut that by not providing a cut someplace else to provide the revenues or a revenue enhancement as I'm proposing here. With the education funding reform. Education funding reform, you know, okay, the governor's against, he's going to veto it. I say damn that torpedo. You know, we should not be worried about what the governor thinks or what he's going to do. We as legislators, our constitutional officers, we need to step up the plate and do what's right for education. That's one area. That's about $400 million a year right there that we can address as part of this deficit. Another area, the governor keeps coming up and saying, well, we've got a deficit, but I want to raise the Medicaid eligibility. Well, we increased that by $600 million last year, increased and expanded the Medicaid eligibility by $600 million. I got to tell you, when you have a $2 billion deficit, you can't be expanding your programs. We need to take care of the people right now who we've obligated to take care of. We can't spend and borrow money that we don't have. So don't expand Medicaid eligibility. Frankly, that's the first place I'd start. That saves you $600 million a year. We have to look throughout the budget to find opportunities like that. I'm not against Medicaid or providing health care to the working poor. That's not my point. My point is that we've got to be able to take care of the ones who we've already committed to take care of and make sure our Medicaid providers get their reimbursement on time. We shouldn't be stringing out the pharmacies, the hospitals, the nursing homes, and all the other Medicaid providers not paying them on time, which is in effect forcing them to go out and borrow money instead of the state taking care of its own fiscal house.
Where would that money come from then?
Well,
I'm
telling you, you should not be expanding the Medicaid eligibility. That's entirely my point. We if you hold the line on eligibility and take care of the people that you have right now, you can begin to make timely payments to Medicaid providers. If you continue to expand at the rate we're expanding right now, in 9 years, we'll have doubled the size of our Medicaid commitment in our budget. And in 20 years, it'll be 60% of our budget. And that's anybody who cares about education or any other program that's not Medicaid related has to recognize that we have to hold the line on Medicaid expansion.
One thing that people, legislators, again, will look at is higher education funding. And the university has said, you know, we can't make many more cuts to our budget. They're, you know, proposing an increase. How will the legislature look at that? Obviously, both of you are advocates of the University of Illinois, but you'll be facing a fight.
I know they can't take any more cuts. We saw that happen for, you know, too many years. Last year, at least, we were able to keep them at the same budget they had the year before. And I believe we both fought hard to make sure that happened. And I will continue to be an advocate for the university. I mean, I've said this so many times. People have heard me say it over and over. You know, I've lived in this community for over 30-some years. I went to the university. Both my degrees are from the U of I. I've taught there. I've worked on the campus in other capacities. My husband has taught there for over 30 years. I have a pretty good understanding. We need to protect this flagship university, this university that brings in millions and millions of dollars in federal funding. You know, if you start making cuts in the departments, then they're not going to be able to do that. They're not going to be able to bring in the funding that they bring in, which, you know, we talk about it being the economic engine. It doesn't stop here in Champaign and Urbana. What happens at the U of I really affects the entire state, our country, and we need to work very hard.
I mean, is that going to be an argument that you can give to other legislators who, you know, the entire state legislature is looking at another dire budget problem?
Well, no question about it. I mean, no single legislator has all the answers, and certainly in higher education funding, no single legislator can stick up for the university and all higher education. However, all of us working together, Representative Jacobson and I and our colleagues in this area, but also most importantly, the key here, the key last year and the key this year, is going to be maintaining that bipartisan coalition, the House Democrats, the House Republicans, and the Senate Republicans working together. And they, as that coalition, have set higher education as a top priority. And that must continue, and we've got to continue to press, because I'll just be perfectly blunt about this. Governor Blagojevich does not care about higher education. He's raided the fund time and time again. He's treated higher education as if it was his ATM machine that he can go to squeeze out cash to pay for other programs that he likes. And in doing so, in shortchanging the higher education, has forced our public universities to go and turn what? To tuition. They have no other way to maintain the quality of higher education but to turn to the students and their families and ask for higher tuition. That is a direct result of the governor advocating slashing the higher education budget and spending that money elsewhere on new programs, his favorite programs.
Senator Jacobson, do you feel that the Democrats in the legislature who don't want to see the further cuts have the ammunition to tilt, you know, to show the governor that it's something that's not that may not be where the cuts may have to come elsewhere?
I believe we do. I mean, we're pretty committed to that. I spend a lot of time talking to my colleagues and trying to help those who don't understand the importance of higher education, the importance of the University of Illinois, to understand that. I think it's very important. You know, you had asked earlier if there were some forums coming up or something, and I just wasn't thinking. I was thinking about what, you know, he and I might be doing, because you ask about us jointly. But I do believe that you probably realize the speaker announced a series of summits that he'll have statewide discussing the budget and how, you know, it affects people, what they want to see. I'm really looking forward to these summits or hearings, whatever they are, and working to make sure that we have one in this area.
That's outstanding. In fact, I applaud the speaker for taking that initiative. And Representative Jacobson, is there anything you and I working together, or if you can get him to schedule one here in Champaign-Urbana and in the Danville area, that would be outstanding. I think that's a great initiative. I'm glad the speaker's doing it. You know, Tom, here's the way it works, real simple. The governor can propose a budget, and he can propose a budget that slams higher education. What happened last year is a coalition with three out of the four caucuses agreed that higher education was a top priority. When we met at the budget table, when the leaders met with the governor, three of the four leaders said no. And you cannot pass a bill, you can't pass a budget into law when three out of the four caucuses will not support it. That's how we were able to hold the line on the cuts that the governor wanted in higher education last year. But let me point out, you know, it's level funding. So 2005 is our current fiscal year, which equals 2004. It looks like Phelan, the budget director, wants to keep that level funding. So FY96 would be the level of funding that we'd have in 2006, because that's what 2004 equals. 2004 equals fiscal year 1996. In other words, if we go with the governor's wanting to keep holding the line here, we're going to be at the same level of funding that we had in 1996. I just want people to understand how severe of an impact this has had in higher education, why it's so important that this coalition sticks together, and I certainly welcome the speaker's initiative to have these kind of hearings on the budgets where we can highlight what he's doing, what the governor's planning to do on higher education.
And I'm almost sure we're going to see one in this
area. Outstanding.
One other thing, during the short session or the lame duck session, the legislature passed a bill barring discrimination against gays and lesbians. Speculation is that there may also be discussion of a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage in the state. Is that going to go through? Is there anybody who's going to be working on that, and what are its chances?
Well, I intend to look at that. I think we need to make sure that we don't have gay marriages in this state. I feel very strongly about that. I'm opposed. I think we need to protect the sanctity of marriage, and I would certainly sponsor or co-sponsor, draft, advocate, do everything I can to pass that kind of constitutional amendment.
But this is from a legislature that did pass the non-discrimination ordinance or bill. Representative Jacobson, is that something that you think is going to have any support in the legislature this year?
Well, you know, I think we need to understand the non-discrimination bill that was passed prohibits discrimination, housing, employment, public accommodations, credit-based, on one sexual orientation, and it even says that it doesn't give special privileges. It's about fairness and decency. It doesn't say anything about marriage, and it doesn't provide special benefits or rights to any individuals, any groups, or any communities.
Is there a chance? I mean, what do you feel that there is a chance that a marriage amendment could come up in the legislature this year? And what would your position be on that?
Well, there's always a chance that things will come up. I mean, we can't. I believe I heard on the news that someone is proposing it.
So would you oppose a marriage amendment if it were to come up?
Well, or? You know, I'd have to see it before I would absolutely say mm-hmm. what way I would vote. But I do not believe in taking rights away from people.
No, and neither do I. But let me tell you, what you said, Representative Jacobson, about the bill is true to the extent that it doesn't allow for gay marriage, the bill that just passed and that the governor signed into law. But let me also point out that was exactly the situation in Massachusetts. In fact, the Massachusetts law expressly forbade that it be used to grant gay marriage. The Massachusetts Supreme Court looked at that statute and looked at their equal protection clause and declared that the Constitution in the state of Massachusetts required their legislature to pass a gay marriage law based on the fact that they had this non-discrimination type of legislation that was enacted. And under equal protection, they concluded that under those circumstances, that gay marriage was not only permitted, but they had to provide for it by statute and force that legislature in Massachusetts to so provide. And that same argument can be used here in Illinois. That's why it's so important to protect marriage, our traditional notions of marriage, in my opinion, and have this kind of constitutional amendment. I'm not ambivalent or ambiguous about this. I mean, I would support it.
One last question. This week, the new governor of Indiana proposed a one-time income tax on people over a certain income level to help reduce the state budget deficit there. Not necessarily a governor who would be interested in a higher tax, but it is the beginning of an administration, a new term. This is an off-election year for the Illinois legislature. Could we see proposals like that, things that may be unpopular in an election year coming up in this year's General Assembly?
Well, I think I've already described my proposal for education funding reform, which Representative Jacobson's kind of taken the notion that, oh my goodness, that's a tax increase, and I don't think I can support that, even if it is for the kids. This is what makes it controversial. My proposal does provide for a tax increase and a property tax swap. The governor's against it, but I'm willing to damn that torpedo and move full speed ahead on it because I think it's the right thing to do. The Indiana governor and his proposal to focus on one part of the society that says if you make this much, you're the only one that pays a tax, I don't think that flies, and I don't think it flies in Illinois, and I think that would be a bad policy and a bad move. We've got to look at a broader spectrum, make sure everybody does their fair share to make sure that we provide the services that we're supposed to provide as a state. And certainly one of our top priorities as a state is providing public education, kindergarten through university. And that's why I'm making my proposal. And I recognize that it is, even in an off-election year, I recognize that it is controversial and it's risky politically. But I think it's the right thing to do, and that's why I'm moving ahead on it.
Representative Jacobson, would it be easier for legislators this year to propose things that in an election year may be unpopular simply because of the worry about the upcoming vote?
Well, you know, I think it might be for some. I believe some legislators just always try to do what they believe their constituents want and what they believe is right, whether it's election year or off election year.
One last thing, just to ask about any specific initiatives that you'll be bringing into the General Assembly.
Yes, I have some that, you know, I've been working on, just as Senator Winkle. You probably have others that you're working on in addition to that one.
Give us a couple of top –
sure.
Two top priorities.
Well,
let's say that.
One of them would – I have a bill that I have submitted that will allow children into the voting booth with their parents. We know that – you know, we want to educate our children. We want more people to vote. And this would specifically clarify that children are allowed in the voting booth with their parents. You know, it's a really good process if a child is interested, or if you can get the child interested by saying, come on, watch me vote. So that's one bill that I have. I think that's very good for us. I have another one that together, we've worked on some legislation in the past on protecting people's privacy information. And so based on a law that's already in effect in California, I'm proposing we have one that would hold public and private entities, companies that hold private consumer information. For example, your credit card company maybe, or your bank, has your social security number and has some other information about you. If they find that they've had a security breach, that someone's hacked into their computers and they've gotten to your private information, these companies need to let you know that your private information has been stolen. So, and I think that's good for protecting our privacy rights.
And along with the Senate Bill 750, is that correct, the education funding bill, what other initiatives are you planning personally?
Well, what I'm planning is an alternative bill to House Bill 750. I mean, okay. It actually would be more of a true education funding reform bill. That's going to be a top priority. As well, I mean, you look at our area, who do we represent? I mean, education, higher education, I mean, those are covered by the education funding reform bill, provides more money for K through university, but also health care. Right now, our not-for-profit hospitals are under siege. They're under attack. It's in the courts, and people are trying to force them to pay property tax and challenging their charitable basis, their not-for-profit status. You know, I stand ready to sponsor legislation to change that, to make sure to clarify that indeed places like Provena and Carl and others throughout the state of Illinois, these not-for-profits do operate on an exclusively charitable basis within the meaning of the Constitution, and that they should not have to pay property taxes. That would just annihilate these not-for-profit hospitals throughout the state if that were the case. So that's something we're looking at and preparing some legislation. Medical malpractice protection. You know, we're having the hearings here on February 8th in Champaign-Urbana and Danville. Health care premiums, of medical malpractice premiums for doctors has skyrocketed. A lot of doctors have left the state, which really imperils our patients to get, you know, whether they can access high-quality medical care. A lot of the specialties are simply leaving. So we're looking at legislation there as well. And also we're working on what we call an agri-science discovery corridor from Danville through Champaign-Urbana up through Bloomington-Normal to Peoria and perhaps even to Moline eventually. Where we're working with both federal and state and university and local officials and businesses, private industry, to develop that corridor. And I stand ready to put in legislation if we need to go in that direction to help develop agriculture, ag science, the discovery process, the innovation process, the proving like in the South Farms and getting that new discovery and those innovations in agri-science to the marketplace.